I had to feed Alvin. He was all up in my grill when I walked out of the room.
Here comes. Doesn't Andy just sound like a happy little mouse?
He's a proper little English mouse. Well, we've had that discussion
before. He's a varmint.
Hello.
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 We could do a barbershop quartet show.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert. All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
Your Starfleet officers, now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple, Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast.
And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland, Paul Spataro, and Dr. Bill Robinson.
Bloody hell.
Hello and welcome to Listen to The Prophets, the never-ending battle quest journey till the end of Deep Space Nine. And we are on the downside, kind of, maybe. There are more behind us than we have in front of us, which is a sad, sad thing. But maybe we'll keep going. Maybe we'll write our own shows, right? Right, guys? Right? We're going to do that? With me is, to my, to quote Dave from last episode, would be my metaphorical right, would be J. David Weider.
Hi. Would you consider this a trek?
To the stars? You're all some type of astronauts on some trek. Yeah, that wasn't a forced line. Anyway, and to my metaphorical middle would be Paul Spataro.
Hello.
And
is it me
to
you're
my
looking for?
And to my metaphorical behind, hey, would be Andrew Leyland.
Hello, Bill.
You Clint
How
Eastwood?
Are you?
That is not Clint Eastwood. That is not Clint Eastwood.
No, that's not his Clint.
That is not Clint Eastwood. It's a very naughty boy.
That was my Leiter impression.
Oh, that is horrible.
Wow. Worked on me. What does that say about me?
I was going to say.
It says, see you next week, everybody.
Dabo!
My Bajoran, he don't like you laughing.
So if you apologize.
So yes, we have I was going to say Lita and her assets centric episode, but that's really not what the episode's about. But
it's about Vulcan sex slaves.
Yeah. Yes.
That's my big takeaway from this episode.
Yeah, mine too.
Yeah.
And just like we said, at peeling back the curtain in our private chat, you know, I really like to see that I'm intrigued now about this program. And now there's a part two.
Logic dictates
I'm intrigued about your program.
As,
you know. Please send me a brochure.
Did you just say logic dictates?
I just want to see what logic would dictate in a sex slave program.
I don't think there'd be any dictating, but maybe
I was going to say,
dictating.
Is that a double entendre there, or, you know, yeah. a little wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more, say no more.
And we stepped all over his very subtle joke because we're assholes.
We're a bunch of dictators.
Hey!
Yes, we are covering Dr. Bashir, I presume, the 114th episode of Deep Space Nine.
To become the doctor of the future.
I'm here to make you immortal.
Bashir's darkest secret must remain buried in his past. Star Trek Voyager's Robert Picardo guest stars on the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
And we are now at the 16th episode of the fifth season. And we've got a guest star, guys! Well, we often have guest stars, but we've got a guest star from another series. One of our all favorite series, right? Yay. Right?
Wait, who do we have from the original series?
No, from another series.
Who do we have from Enterprise?
Robert Picardo we have.
Robert Picardo, yes.
Oh, but Scott Bakula would have been great on Deep Space Nine, wouldn't he?
Scott Bakula's great in everything.
Yes,
what would
he is.
Play? What would he play on Deep Space Nine?
He could be a hologrammatic version of Archer, who shows up in our last ever episode of Deep Space Nine, and he makes the episode all about him. I cannot possibly see how that idea could go wrong.
I thought you were going with a Quantum Leap joke, being, yeah. You know, he would be a holographic version of, you know.
I love the idea that on Deep Space Nine, Captain Archer is now the hologram. That would be brilliant.
People pass their hand through him.
You gotta get me out of this leap, Archer.
And he's smacking the tricorder.
All right, so where are you guys? Where's your original familiarity with Robert Picardo? Is it from Voyager or somewhere else?
Innerspace.
Oh, yeah, I forgot Innerspace. See, I first took notice of him on Wonder Years.
Oh, he was
He was in Gremlins, too.
He was in Gremlins,
That's the first time I remember seeing him.
Well, he was a prolific guest star in a lot of shows, so he was a that guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's had an extensive career as that guy, as Robert Picardo. But for our purposes, obviously, he's better known as the Doctor, the holographic Doctor, Dr. Zimmerman, whatever his name was, over on Star Trek Voyager. Mm-hmm. This is his first appearance as Zimmerman, is that right? Although Zimmerman will show up in an episode of Voyager later on.
Yeah, this was his first appearance as Dr. Zimmerman, not as the EMH. Because he'd also already played EMH in the Star Trek movie.
That's what I was gonna say. Yeah. He's made the trifecta now. He's hit the next-gen cast and Voyager and now Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But having him appear as Zimmerman is just, I think it's really, really clever, and they never bother to even mention that he's doing it on Voyager. They do have him appear as the EMH for that moment on this show, but his appearance here is totally standalone. Mm-hmm. You don't need any other perspective on him to understand who he is and what he's doing. And you can see what I feel is a little subtlety to his performance is you could see that he's totally jealous that he wasn't chosen as being the long term.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're jumping ahead. I think
Bill doesn't want to read the synopsis.
So. No. So do we have any? I don't think we have any new news.
We have no news, but I think what was interesting about this episode was that Dr. Bashir is a descendant of Raj from the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. Well, actually, they're brothers because they have the same father.
Well, I presume this is a descendant of Raj's father.
I'm thinking he's a time traveler.
Or unless Raj's father is a time traveler, yes. Or he falls through his own wormhole.
Was he a menace.
Robert Picardo was in Seinfeld.
When was he on Seinfeld? I can't remember that.
I don't know. I never watched Seinfeld. I just know it's on his IMDb.
Well, now I'm gonna have to look. So you go on talking, and I will look and find out which episode it was.
But yeah, so they're the two main big guest stars for the episode, and we'll get into that more after Bill regales us with the magnificently written synopsis.
Yes. So, Dr. Bashir, I presume. Dr. Lewis Zimmerman comes to Deep Space Nine with the intent of using Dr. Bashir's physical and personality likeness as a template for a long-term medical hologram, an LMH, as opposed to the short-term emergency medical hologram installed on ships such as USS Voyager and the Enterprise E. Whereas the EMH, which Zimmerman used himself as the model, is for short-term emergency use, the LMH will provide full-time medical care on distant and isolated outposts where it might not be possible to station a doctor. In order to make the hologram as robust as possible, Zimmerman needs a complete personality profile on Bashir. In addition to questioning Bashir himself, Zimmerman interviews Bashir's colleagues and makes arrangements against Bashir's wishes to invite Julian's estranged parents, Amsha and Richard Bashir, to the station. Julian is embarrassed by his father's tendency towards hyperboil. For example, he
references hyperboil.
Hyperboil.
Can you get that, Lance?
Hyperbole. Sorry.
I knew I was going to do that.
It's the sport of the future, the hyperbole.
Darn it. You're going to cut that out, right, Dave?
They can give medicine.
No. That stays in.
That stays in, yeah.
And I was going to screw up the Digion. That was what I was worried about. And hyperbole snuck up on me.
Hyperbole.
Hit me right in the back of the head. Julian is embarrassed by his father's tendency towards hyperbole. For example, he references a time he ran shuttles when in fact Richard was merely a steward who was fired shortly into his career. I should just mispronounce everything now. Career. Julian implores his parents It did her not to reveal to Zimmerman anything about a secret from his childhood, and they are angered that he thinks they will be so sloppy to reveal such a secret. Later, his parents go to the infirmary, said correctly, to try to assuage... God, I get tears in my eyes. I can't even see. To assuage their son's fears, stating emphatically that they will not tell Zimmerman that they had Julian genetically modified when he was a child. Whoops. They point out that they have kept the secret since he was a child, and that because such modifications are illegal in the United Federation of Planets, they too are culpable. However, Bashir's parents are unaware that they are speaking to Zimmerman's new hologram rather than speaking to their son. Zimmerman and Chief O'Brien, who was assisting Zimmerman with the LMH project, are right around the corner and hear everything said. Paul, remind me, I have a legal question about that. So,
Okay.
O'Brien informs Julian about what he heard. Julian is furious over this disclosure, but then confirms that he was genetically modified as a child. He relates that he was a poor student with some form of learning disability and possibly physical and intellectual disabilities as well, and seemed destined to failure. His parents took him to Adigeon Prime, said correctly, for Dina? For Dina? Oh, wait, that's DNA. Resequencing.
There is no Dina. There's only Zool.
Greatly improving his intelligence and his physicality. With the secret out, Bashir sees no alternative but to resign from Starfleet. However, before Bashir can tender his resignation, his parents take matters into their own hands. Richard strikes a deal with the Starfleet Judge Advocate General, Rear Admiral Bennett. Richard will spend 2 years in a minimum security prison for illegal genetic engineering, and Julian is allowed to retain his commission and his medical license. Admiral Bennett points out that the dangers of genetic manipulation by noting that for every Julian Bashir, an immensely talented physician, there is a potential for a Khan Noonien Singh. Julian makes some peace with his parents as they depart for Earth, grateful for his father's sacrifice. As this is going on, meanwhile, Zimmerman pursues Dabble Girl Lita's affections to the point of asking her to accompany him back to Jupiter Station to open her own bar. Shy Rom is too scared to say anything to convince her to stay, despite it being clear that Lita would welcome any reason to stay with him. She is on the verge of getting onto a transport with Zimmerman when Rom careens around the corner in one long yell for her to wait until he gets there. He finally gives her the long-awaited reason to stay. I love you. Lita reciprocate. Lita agrees. Stay. Zimmerman leaves on his own, but immediately flirts with another woman as he boards the ship. Dum da da dum 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 dum. My chest hurts.
Is it the hyperboil? Is it acting up again?
I think my hyperboil's kicking in.
Can we get that hyperboil lanced?
I think I laughed too hard.
I looked at the last episode and I thought, boy, I wouldn't want to read this one. This is a long synopsis. This one I thought wasn't so bad.
Anyway. Yeah, until Bill read it, yeah.
And then it became wonderful.
I cannot find anywhere that Robert Picardo was on Seinfeld. Where did you see that?
I know it somewhere, but I must have imagined it because I'm looking through it now and I can't see it either. So it's my imagination.
Just your imagination. But interestingly, and I don't have it on my screen anymore, is when I Googled him, I came up with something where his wife was implicated in a murder.
What?
Oh, okay. I mean, I said it. And I'm going to have to get it back on my screen again, but I just...
Oh, yeah. We got to see what that's
China
about
before Beach.
We
go
on. Yeah, he was Dick, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
In China Beach.
Here we go. Yeah. Linda Pollock, Robert Picardo's estranged wife, charged as an accessory to murder 6 months after he told a judge he feared for his life. Linda Pollock, 60, of Sierra Madre, was arrested on Wednesday on suspicion of being an accessory to the murder of Edward Mello last October. She is the estranged wife of Star Trek Voyager actor Robert Picardo, who played the EMH, known as the Doctor. In November of 2014, the 61-year-old doctor applied for a restraining order against his wife and told the judge that he feared for his life. The gun used to kill Mello was registered to Pollock. Interesting.
Wait a minute. The article refers to him as a doctor, and he's not really a doctor, but you won't...
No, the man that got killed was a doctor.
Oh, okay.
Doctor,
what? So it's like
doctor,
it's like doctor. A real life fugitive.
Yeah.
Huh. So it was really a one armed person.
He's the one armed man.
I'm innocent. I don't care.
All right, I got a legal question. All right, Julian's parents admit they think they're talking to their son, and they admit this, and two people overhear it. Is that actually admissible, Paul?
I would say yes, it is. First of all, there was no true effort to deceive them, so they can't say that they were entrapped.
I don't know. I would think you could argue that because they're talking to their son.
Yeah,
they think it, but no one set
a plan in motion to fool them. This isn't something where they say
it's not entrapment, right?
Yes, so they can't claim that. When you start coming into, you know, relevancy questions or hearsay.
But it's a privacy because they think they're having a private conversation.
They can think whatever the hell they want. They were wrong.
They're in a public sick bay, basically.
If I go into a crowded room and I say something, but I don't think other people can hear me because I whisper louder than I think I do, that's my problem.
Remember when we genetically modified you?
You can't claim hearsay because it is an admission against interest.
Hearsay, how do you spell that?
Which is an exception to the hearsay
rule.
Heresy?
What? Oh,
sorry.
Also, as well, they're not doing this in a court of law. Robert Picardo's Dr. Zimmerman and is simply reporting to Starfleet something that he's found out during the course of his conversations with Dr. Bashir, and then Starfleet Command have got in touch with Bashir about the implications of what Zimmerman says. So there's no legal things going on in this episode. It's not like it's a courtroom drama or anything.
Right, right. And the Bashir LMH is effectively a computer, so its memory of what was said in front of it is probably admissible as undeniable that it was, that it was a fact that those words were said.
Right.
So I don't think they'd have any real defense to it. I thought that was a great. I'm going to use a contradiction in terms. I thought it was a great plot contrivance to have them do that. the way he's just standing there. It seemed kind of obvious that he was the LMH as they're talking to him.
Well, yeah, but they
not don't really because
know
he's
that's
been
what's
in,
going on.
But he's been indifferent and at sometimes hostile to them. So his performance or his actions as the LMH are not out of character as to how he would be reacting to them now, being with the indifference that the LMH has, because the LMH doesn't know who these people are.
But he hasn't been indifferent to them. When he's really been there, he's been animated and emotional.
Yes, he has, but...
And now he's the LMH, and he's totally indifferent.
No,
it's almost like last episode...
off at somebody and just ignore them when they're talking to you. Like, you could just be like, I don't have any time for you. No, I could still see that him being... I could see how they were fooled by this.
I could see why they were fooled, but kind of with the knowledge of what's going on with the LMH there and everything, I don't think it was a shock when you realize that that's the LMH. I think as you're watching it, you're thinking, oh, shit, what are they doing? I think it was obvious, but I thought it was obvious in a good way. Like I said, it was just played out very nicely, and I thought his acting there, unlike last episode when all of a sudden he becomes stoic and quiet, I thought it was correctly done in this instance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we get two episodes of Road where Bashir gets to play another character as himself.
But he did it this time. I thought he did it better. Even though last episode was a great episode, I thought he did it better in this one.
He does, because he kind of seems to be mimicking Robert Picardo's performance as the AMH, which makes perfect sense.
Question he's mimicking him, because they transferred the program from the EMH to the LMH, and then they had to add in Bashir's personality. They hadn't really done that yet.
Which is why I think he does a really good job with that, because he is deliberately trying to be Picardo's version of the medical hologram. The acting honours for this one go to Robert Picardo, though, because it's really... He's brilliant. It's so wonderful to see a Star Trek character come on who isn't perfect bastion of humanity. He's an irritating pain in the ass. And I love Sisko's, I will tolerate you because I have to, because I don't have to work with you conversation with him, which I just thought was brilliant.
I love him as the EMH when he thinks he's being replaced. I think he's just one of the best deadpan actors
you're going to find. Mm-hmm. And he just does that so well, because he has that deadpan way of speaking, but he throws emotion into it, which is just, again, another contradiction in terms, but it's just so well done. You know, he can seem robotic and emotional at the same time, which is, I honestly don't know how he pulls that off.
He can throw some snark out there right on you, and you don't even know he's throwing it on you. You're like, wait, what? Did you just insult me?
He was absolutely. I think one of the things I really enjoyed about this one is that the two-parter prior to this was obviously very heavy. Mm-hmm. And this one, for its first half, it's a comedy. It's a flat-out comedy for the first half of this episode, and it's exceptionally well-written comedy because it's all in the dialogue and the performances, and some of it is genuinely amusing. Like the conversation at the bit, which is going to be my favourite line when we get to it, about Rom fancying Lita and Lita fancying Rom, and the entire conversation about he needs a woman with a body and brains, and Lita says, I have brains. And Quark says, sure you do, honey. That's why I hired you. Now go back to the Darbo wheel where the customers can get a good look at your brains.
And he suddenly points down with like he's like, yeah, take your brains over to the Darbo table.
Yeah, that's and there's that wonderful bit in the middle where they're talking about Bashir is now going to be the long-term medical program. And O'Brien looks at him and says, this is brilliant news. You can get to irritate people you've never met. And I just thought the first half of this episode was some of the best comedy that Star Trek has done in ages. And then they do that left turn in the middle of it to make it more dramatic. And it works. Mm-hmm. Fair play to them. They pull that off. They pull off that this comedic episode at the beginning that you get the feeling Bashir is not really taking this seriously. He kind of thinks it's an honor, but he's not bothered about it. And it suddenly becomes a serious character drama explaining why Bashir was the slightly arrogant fop that he was in the early episodes. And it works.
It's also giving you a story reason for him to be the incredible doctor that he is. It's not just, you know, every star base and starship that you go to that we're going to focus on has the best doctor ever. You know, there's a reason for this. There's a reason for why he is so as competent as he is. And it's illegal. And that's cool. Mm. And his parents, his father starts off as very two-dimensional and comedic. And he becomes three-dimensional through exposition from the mother, which I think is very clever writing.
Yeah, and
yeah, because the father's too, I guess, proud, or you know, can't convey his feelings as well as his wife can convey them to their son, to mm-hmm. Bashir.
I like that through the parents and through, I mean, just the story that Bashir tells about how it came about, he actually becomes a three-dimensional character himself, more so than ever.
Yeah, and from this point forward, I think, you know, when we see Bashir, it will have more more gravitas to it than it has in the past. And we're going to get some Bashir-centric episodes coming up in the... I don't know when they start coming up, but they'll be coming. And now it's not cringeworthy like it would have been two or three seasons ago if all of a sudden they told you we're going to have some episodes focusing on him.
What also puts the rest of the series up to this point in a different perspective is he and O'Brien are playing darts, and he's just effortlessly hitting his targets. He's been holding back this whole time, which is kind of surprising for as egotistical as he came off, and still does.
I wonder at what point they made a determination that this was where they were going to go with him. You know, is this something that they just came up with out of the clear blue sky during season five? It wasn't in the Bible, which we've read, you know, a long time ago. You know, at what point did they say, we need to give you a little more depth to Bashir and we're going to explain why he's so brilliant?
Well, according to The Companion and Memory Alpha, which quotes from The Companion, it was just in this episode. They'd bought this idea of Zimmerman coming aboard and making Bashir the new long-term hologram. And in the breaking of the story, they decided that they didn't just want to do an outright comedic episode for 45 minutes that was about that. So they needed a dramatic hook for the episode, and that's what they came up with, the genetic engineering thing. So it was very much came here. And the original script ended with O'Brien blackmailing Zimmerman into not saying anything so that only he and Bashir and O'Brien would know about it. And Alexander Siddig apparently went to the producers and said, I think it would be far more interesting if everybody knows. And it's something he has to deal with out in the open from now on. And they agreed with him and changed the end of the script.
Mm-hmm. I'll agree with him as well.
And it also gave his father a chance to shine and to become even more three-dimensional by taking, you know, by having a character arc in this story. You know, that now all of a sudden he's earned Bashir's respect, which he did not have before this. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was I think this is a much better ending. You know, O'Brien has shown us he'll bend the rules when he needs to. So right. That would have neither been here nor there as far as him doing that. But I just think this was a better way to end it.
Well, and, you know, does this kind of shed we talked a little bit about how this series, more so than the others, sheds a light on the other side of society and government, to where it's not as simple and utopian as originally presented, that here you can have people that, you know, everything is not always perfect for people. You know, Bashir's dad, Richard, I don't want to say he's a loser, but he's just trying different things because he can't find it I guess it's nice to have a society where you can keep trying different things until you find something that works for you. But he's tried different careers and he can't succeed really in any of them.
But I think that this is a nice look at Star Trek's future from Iris Dee.
Yes.
This idea that he can keep going from job to job, because he's obviously not a work shy layabout who doesn't want to do anything.
No.
He clearly does want to work, but he's just not finding anything that suits him. And in real life, you don't get that often. You don't get that choice a lot of the time. You either know what you want to do and you pursue that goal, or you fall into something because you've got to pay the bills. So I thought this was quite a nice look at the Star Trek future, that this guy, he didn't always want to be in Starfleet. He didn't want to always pursue whatever career he wanted. He's just gone from job to job and he's made a mess of quite a lot of them, but he still seems quite a happy person.
Mm-hmm.
That must be nice.
Yeah. just the idea that you can try other things and not be concerned over much that if you fail at it, you're going to lose your house.
Yeah.
Well, makes our time a little more depressing.
Well, our time is very depressing at the minute anyway. So.
But moving from the main to the subplot, I'm actually very happy to see them move on with the Leda story and you know, hit the romance with Rom. It's fine. It was okay. I had no problem with it. But there was no need to drag this on and make it a continuing subplot about how he's unrequited in love with her. We've already seen enough of it. I'm kind of glad that they've taken that one to the next step now.
The only thing I didn't get about this story is, why couldn't Lisa just ask him out? It's the 24th century, for God's sake.
Yeah, she seems so forward and everything else. But one less, maybe because she really, really likes him and doesn't,
Well, maybe it's because she feels as a Dabo girl, she's not at the level where she should be, that forward with a member of, effectively now a member of the crew.
She's been out with Dr. Bashir.
With Bashir, yeah.
But she didn't ask him either. I don't believe.
And Rom is also the brother of her boss, her direct supervisor.
Yeah, I can't see Quark giving a toss, to be honest with you, as long as it doesn't affect his bottom line. I mean, Lita's got a lot of front, and, you know, she drops her towel in front of Zimmerman, and that doesn't bother her.
I thought she was taller.
Didn't bother me either.
Yeah, well, I didn't really care how tall she was.
Oh, well. I don't know. It seemed like in other episodes she was portrayed as being much taller, but maybe she's wearing heels in those ones. Whatever.
Or maybe they've took the heels off her because she's working with Quark and Rom.
Could be, yeah.
Who aren't the tallest actors in the world. But I thought that little subplot was quite charming, and I thought they did a good job of integrating it with the A-plot, which sometimes they don't do. I think some of the worst episodes are the ones where the A, B, and sometimes C-plot are completely unrelated. Yeah. And there's a lot of times you're like, can we fast forward through this plot, really? Because I want to get back to the other one. Whereas I thought they did a really good job of mixing the two of them. And I really liked Bashir's parents. I thought they were very good. Again, I thought this was a top-notch episode. I liked that it was very different from the last episode, but in its own way was just a seismic.
Yeah. And like you said, the plots, there was cause and effect between the two of them.
Well, the only place where I felt like this episode kind of fell short is just because I watched them back-to-back. And the last episode was so chock full of information and so frenetically paced that this was a dramatic slowdown after watching that. I think this one benefits from having a week in between, which I did not do. I don't think this episode is made for binge watching.
No, it is a bit of a smack in the face after the last episode. Yeah, I agree with that. But again, I think this just ties into the idea that when this was made, it was a weekly serial. And I think you just kind of have to allow for it. I thought it was a nice change of pace after the last two episodes.
That's what I was going to say, a good palate cleanser.
Oh, it absolutely was, but I think what I should have done was watched by Inferno's Light and then taken a break and then come back and watch this.
Yeah.
All right.
Instead of watching them back to back. It, like I said, I just don't feel like it was made for binge watching. This is more of a standalone, even though it has repercussions that we're going to see later on.
I'll give you that, because I did watch these same morning. Normally, I'll try to watch one night and the next the following night, but these two were kind of packed in together. And, yeah, there's a definite step down, not because it's a bad episode, but because last episode was such a big powerhouse.
Yeah, well, I did it that way. I watched Inferno's Light on Wednesday night and Dr. Bashir on Thursday.
Okay, and I kind of wish I had done it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I didn't have that whiplash from the tonal differences of the two episodes. I just went into Dr. Bashir as a completely separate episode and thought, ooh, I wasn't expecting a lot from it. I'll be brutally honest with you. After the 5-star of the last two, and I ended up being pleasantly surprised by it.
Mm-hmm. What do we?
Yeah, and I, you know, rating this one, which we will do soon, I needed to step back and rate it based on its own merits and detractions, not on, you know, comparison to the episode before it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What did we think of the ending that Starfleet was just willing to brush it under the carpet that he's been enhanced? Although I did like the mention of Khan.
Well, I kind of like to talk to not only that, and I do want to get into that, but I also think we should get into the fact that because of Khan, that's why it's illegal. That's why it's procedure forbidden.
Mm. Just like Genesis.
Yeah.
Yes. But I think that's. I don't know if it's an overreaction or if it's a correct thing that they have the ability to do this now, and they've just said, no, you can't, it's illegal.
Well,
I'm done. Before you respond to that, I just want to throw out the thought that look at our current day and age and how many children are born with autism, which I think it's a common thought that it is due to the amount of chemicals that are on our food, because we didn't have nearly this many autistic children 50 years ago as we do now.
I don't know about that. I mean,
well, don't let my comment on the cause. Distract you from the point. But we have an element in our society where we have so many children who are suffering with this, and parents who are trying to deal with their children with this. And I have a good friend who has an autistic child, and it breaks your heart, because the kid, you can see the kid has the intelligence inside. He's got the lack of communication skills, and I don't want to make this too personal, but if you have the ability to genetically fix things like that, is it appropriate to do it from a societal point of view? Is it appropriate to do it from a moral point of view? Are you changing what this person was? This is how the person was born. Is it appropriate to change that? Is it just curing an ill? Is it changing the person? What is it doing? And is it appropriate for society to say, no, that's illegal, you can't do it, because there's the danger of it being escalated into a Khananian Singh thing?
Yeah. It's a slippery slope, though.
Yeah, but it opens up questions on effectively what is mostly a lighthearted episode. But when you start peeling away the layers on it, it becomes a huge question that I don't think you're capable of answering it. You know, at least not in a simple podcast. You know, you'd have to do all sorts of soul searching and you know, thought about it. I'm sure most people who know an autistic person would think, yes, let's give them the ability to communicate and to think in a way that people who are not autistic can. And it's an amazing thing when you start thinking about autism, because, you know, people almost joke around about it when they talk about the spectrum, because it is not something that is simple. It is something where each case is so individual that you don't know, you know, the extent of where it's going to affect. I mean, there are people who are functioning and probably never diagnosed who do have some level of that. And it's an amazing thing when you start delving into it. And I don't know if I'm just ranting here and I'm going too far off the field of what we, you know, what we're really here for. But when you start considering the ramifications of genetic engineering and being able to change things like that, and then you start taking it to the step further of not just that, but all sorts of genetic deficiencies that people are born with, then you start getting into the, well, you know, are we going to just become a homogenous society where we, you know, we all have the same abilities because we can genetically manipulate it? You know, it just opens up such a can of worms to think about it, that it's, like I said, there's just so much more to this episode than is there on its face.
Well, let me counter rant a little bit. There are two things I want to respond to. you start with something like autism, or you start with something like cerebral palsy, something, you know, affliction that this person can't live a quote-unquote normal life. Okay, who gets the power to say what's what? That becomes a slippery slope, and that's the context that Khan was in. That
I totally agree with you. We are not disagreeing at all, Dave.
No, and I'm expanding a little bit. But the reason that they're like, well, Khan, it's not just Khan. There were a group of them. This was a huge eugenic war that tore the world apart for several years. It's a throwback to our era now. Would they do the same thing with Starfleet in the 24th century? No, probably not. But that fear of the slippery slope is why it's so illegal. And that's why they reacted so strongly, because in the wrong hands, who decides what is superior? Because, I mean, the perfect example would be the Nazis. The Aryan, Ubermensch.
And I agree with you totally.
Yeah.
So why would they just sweep it under the carpet now?
I will agree with that. If you have, a genetically... Well, I think Bashir's record speaks for him. I think Sisko was able to go to bat. O'Brien was probably able to go to bat. And that probably kept Bashir from getting drummed out. But
the idea that Bashir hasn't used his genetic enhancements to try and overthrow a planet probably went in his favor. But this also plays into the question then, well, okay, is Geordi the only blind guy in Starfleet? Mm. Is that the kind of thing you can fix in utero with genetic engineering? And it's like you were both saying, so at what point then do you start tinkering with people who genetically have nothing wrong with them to make them better?
Yeah.
And that's what they're talking about with Bashir. They've not made him, you know, super strong or anything. They just enhanced his intelligence. And it's a fascinating topic for Star Trek to tackle. And if we're going to look at this episode from that point of view, it doesn't do it, because that's why I asked the question of what we think of the ending. The ending just kind of brushes it under the carpet. And his dad's going to go. Yeah, his dad's going to get put in prison for, 2 years, 18 months, whatever it was, and then get off with good behavior or whatever, because he did something illegal in the past. But the whole idea of the genetic engineering thing is fascinating, and it's a fascinating discussion for you to go, well, if I'm told my child has cerebral palsy or is blind in the womb and I can fix it with genetic engineering, do I have the right to make that decision? Just because science can do it, does that make it morally acceptable? And if I do this, how far am I going to go?
And then you turn into Dr. Malcolm.
Yeah. Yeah. Just because you can do a thing doesn't mean you should do a thing.
Well, two things before I forget them. One,
it's pronounced hyperbole.
What I was saying before when we started the discussion about autism, what I wanted to say was I'm not arguing that it could be something with food, et cetera, but I think it's more because we have two autistic, actually three autistic people in my wife's family. Her sister has two children. One is severely, one can middle of the road with his functionality. One is in a group home. So I think it's more of an awareness now, and that it is diagnosed more, and it's not as – I think society has changed, and a lot of these children, you know, you go back 30, 40 years, the stigma, you know, of, well, there's just, you know, that – well, they're retarded, or, you know, let's just put them in a mental home. There's something wrong with them, or they're just given menial job. I think it is more of an awareness and a diagnosis now of autism that makes us – maybe that is why it seems like there's so many more cases that it's actually being brought to the forefront.
I mean, we can probably debate this forever, and we don't have the data to truly.
Oh, yeah. I don't have any data.
But I think it is a more common occurrence now. I don't think it's just a matter of diagnosis. I'm not saying it didn't exist in the past, but I think it has escalated. And I personally, without the data to back it up, attribute it to the different kinds of chemicals and different things that are in our food that have affected things. That's my own personal belief. Whether it's accurate or not, I cannot tell you.
Oh, I'm with you on that, because I got a whole nother rant about that and why kids are fat. But anyway, my second point is, and this goes kind of back to the show, you know, with the universe there. What do you think? All right, now that this has come out that Bashir is genetically enhanced, if that gets out in the general public and people know, would the people that have gone up against him for promotions or in his class? Now, you know, he was going to be first in his class but, you know, he mistook the preganglionic nerve or whatever. So now we can say, well, he did that on purpose so that he
wouldn't sign too much. Yeah.
Right. He threw the test. But now this opens up for anybody who ever had to go against him for a promotion or whatever. They can say, well, wait a minute. I didn't get that job because I was going up against this genetically enhanced guy.
Well, is that retroactively the reason he's took this job in the ass end of Noah?
Right. But remember, there was other people that wanted to get – I mean, there could still be somebody that's pissed. Like, okay, he was number two in his class. Well, the number three person in the class could be like, you know, I would have been number two if I wasn't going against him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, see, there's always going to – so that leads to a whole other set of legal implications going back to our real world. If you're genetically enhanced, well, it's like, well, wait a minute. That person got a leg up in life because their parents had the money to perform this enhancement, and now my kid doesn't. I didn't have the money to do – you know, it's – well,
let's
a whole different
let's take that to a real life scenario, and it's not life and death, but Ryan Braun on the Milwaukee Brewers won the National League MVP a few years back. After that, it was he failed a drug test for steroids.
Mm-hmm.
He ended up getting the results of that test thrown out, but everybody knows he did it. Does that now negate the MVP award he won? I personally think it does, but they never officially did it.
Well, they did that with the home run record too, didn't they? Or there's an asterisk on it? No, I think
the home run record is what the home run record is. I think we all know Barry Bonds did steroids also, and that he was able to genetically enhance himself to get this, you know, to get that record. You know, there's no doubt that Babe Ruth had not done that, and Hank Aaron had not done that. So it is kind of unfair, but. You know, we move on because it just gets sloppy, really, is what it comes down to try and correct everything. So, you know what? You want to feel like you lost out to Bashir in your, you know, level in the medical class because he was enhanced. Yeah, you're right. But he is still better at you than this, you know, whatever the reason. Mm-hmm. So let's not, you know, begrudge him the fact that he's doing whatever job he's doing. He's doing it for the, you know, for the benefit of Starfleet or society or whatever you want to say. You know, is the way he got there
not
right?
Maybe in the future it'll work that way. But I'm saying our current present day society, there will be people that will not see it that way. And it, you know.
I think in the future, that if I was number three in the class, and I don't care what year I'm in, if I was number three in the class and he beat me out because he's enhanced, I'm going to be raising hell over it. But, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Well, it also begs the question as well as how public is Starfleet going to make this? Yes, well, Starfleet.
You've got to assume they're not making it public at all. That's why they're letting it get swept under the rug.
Yeah, the Starfleet Command knows about it. The command crew of Deep Space Nine know about it. And his dad's going to jail for it. And as far as they're concerned, it's probably a closed book never to be talked about again.
You should have to wear a scarlet letter. It should say on a shirt enhanced.
It's an E.
He should be Emma Thingio in, what was that called where they did Scarlet Letter? Easy A.
Easy A, yeah. Emma Stone.
Mm.
They should be keeping a closer eye on him now. Because their history with genetic enhancements is Kanani and Singh. And while he seems benevolent at this point, how do they know that's going to keep up?
If only there was some type of section in Starfleet.
Well, is this where they get interested in him then?
Maybe somewhere in the upper 20s or the lower 30s.
So is this when Section 34 become interested in Dr. Bashir?
Is it Section 31?
Section 31, whatever.
Section 34 is a different thing. That's Plumbers Union.
Yeah. You're joking, though, but that's actually a very good point. Is this when they start becoming interested in it?
Well, that was my point. Is this where they're like, oh, you know what?
We have talked more about the concept and the ramifications of genetic engineering in Star Trek more than the episode did.
Because it is fascinating to talk about, isn't it? It is fascinating to think about.
Yeah, that's the episodes that I think are the most fascinating, are the ones that lead you to discussion and then leave it to you to go through them.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that as well, where they don't signpost it for you. I just watched an episode of Supergirl. It wasn't from this season. It was from last season. And the episode is the one where Jimmy Olsen as Guardian gets his mask blasted off his face in the middle of serving somebody. And in the scene, the police see two white people there and the black guy, which is Jimmy,
and they point the gun at Jimmy. That was a very subtle way of making the point that the two white people who were the bad guys were the ones that got away. They should have left it there. Midway through the episode, the show stops dead to have a monologue in the mini of it of Jimmy saying that the first time he had handcuffs put on him by a policeman was when he was 7. And it's like the opposite of what this episode does. It's like, I got the point you were making in the subtle scene earlier on where the police pointed their weapons at the one black guy in the scene. I didn't need you to stop dead in the middle of the show so McCard Brooks could have his Give Me an Emmy moment. And this episode is particularly good at just giving you all of that and letting you think about it yourself.
Mm-hmm. Or, if you choose not to, just watch it on its face and move on.
Yeah, if you choose to.
I like that. I like that you have the choice of how deeply you want to go into it. In this episode, I think the questions are very, very big, and there are no answers to it, really.
No, but our discussion has changed my rating, so.
You can have a conversation. Our Starfleet right to outright ban it. Have they made the right decision, though? Because as we've pointed out in this discussion, there's lots of uses for it that would not be considered against the grain. But as David pointed out, you then have people saying, well, we can eliminate this section of the personality that for whatever reason I don't approve or believe in.
Mm-hmm. Well, and clearly there's a black market for it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So since there is, and now you're getting into things like where they talk about like legalizing marijuana. Since there is a black market for it, are you better off legalizing it but controlling it and having it under your watchful eye, or are you better off just having it out there on the black market but banned for all legal purposes? It's another aspect of it. This is one of these ones where like it's an onion and we just keep getting layer on layer on layer.
Yeah.
On an episode that otherwise seems simple.
Yeah, or we could just look at this one and look at Lita and Rom and Quark and think this is a really adorable, fun episode.
Yeah. Which it's both. And that's the great part about it.
Yeah.
And I agree with Dave. My rating on this, as we talk about it and we start peeling the layers on it, my rating went up a half a point.
Mm-hmm. Well, mine went up half a point when Lita dropped her towel, but that's completely independent of our discussion.
So getting to our new thing on the show, favorite quote.
Okay. You want me to go first?
If you want.
I'm going to – it's long, so it's the one about why Julian was enhanced. It's Amsha. You never had a child. You don't know what it's like to watch your son, to watch him fall a little further behind every day. You know he's trying, but something's holding him back. You don't know what it's like to stay up every night worrying that maybe it's your fault. Maybe you did something wrong during the pregnancy. Well, I'm showing, so. And maybe you weren't... Or maybe there's something wrong with you. Maybe you passed on a genetic defect without even knowing it. His father says, Amsha says, no, this is important. You can condemn us for what we did. You can say it's illegal or immoral or whatever you want to say, but you have to understand that we didn't do it because we were ashamed, but because you were our son and we loved you. And I picked that because the first time I saw this, it just would have washed over me. Or actually, no, my daughter would have been born, but it still would have really washed over me, and I wouldn't affected me the same as it does now, because when Ben was born, Ben had a cleft palate. He's had other issues as he's grown up. And
we had him genetically enhanced.
Well, we didn't have him genetically enhanced, but there's things that he did have a learning thing or early on, which we figured out had to do with his eyesight, and that was corrected through training with his eyes. It was like some weird thing where he had one eye that was weak and was making it he couldn't read properly. So he had to go through eye exercises to actually strengthen up his one eye that was weak. Like he couldn't focus properly and he would see double vision. So
Mike Wachowski.
So
just leave that one. Don't even.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Comes from. Yeah. So, but yeah, that's why this episode now affects me more than the first time I saw it because of that, the things that have happened in my life. So that's my quote.
Line, by the way, just a comment on that. I was watching it in my office here. My wife was watching over my shoulder. She kind of came in and didn't have all the context, but that brought her to tears, that whole speech.
All right, I'm going to bring the tone down considerably by saying that my favorite line was Quark's. Sure you do, honey. That's why I hired you. Now eat up and take those brains back to the Dabo wheel where the customers can get a good long look at them.
That was mine.
I was going to say honorable mention to Dr. Zimmerman's line about, have you ever read the Kama Sutra at the end when he's born?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going more lighthearted on my line of the episode, which is O'Brien saying, wow, think of it, Julian. If this thing works, you'll be able to irritate hundreds of people you've never even met. But there's another line that made me another one that gave me some thought to talk about, which I'll get to after Dave gives his best line.
No, mine was the same as Andy's.
Okay. The other one that just made me, you know, another food for thought one is when Julian is arguing with his dad. And he says, you don't understand. I stopped calling myself Jules when I was 15, and I found out what you'd done to me. I'm Julian. And his father says, what difference does that make? It makes every difference because I'm different. Can't you see? Jules Bashir died in that hospital because you couldn't live with the shame of having a son who didn't measure up. So that is another one that's just giving depth to this because it's saying as the beneficiary of this genetic enhancement, he hates it and he's upset by it and he's embarrassed by it. I just think, again, just throws so much depth into this episode. They, you know, you were given, as a gift, his parents gave him a genius intellect, and he's unhappy about it because it changed him. It's not who he is or who he was born, who he is naturally. Whereas I think on first blush, you'd think, well, of course I'll accept that. That's great. But it's not so great. And I just think, again, it just adds more depth to this episode. I just think there's so much in this one that we, you know, we didn't that you don't see on its face.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then let's do our ratings. Bill, it's your episode.
I am going to give this. I mean, you know, we came off such a high point, and we went into this one. I'm tempted to give it a 5, but I'm going to give it a 4.25 genetic enhancements.
Okay, I was originally at 4 on this one, which, you know, saying it was a very solid episode, but it just wasn't, you know, at that peak level like the other ones. But after our discussion, I'm up to 4.5 because I just think this is excellent.
I'm pretty much the same. Yeah, I was at 4, and I think, yeah, based on what we've talked about, there's a lot to chew on here, 4.5.
Mm-hmm. Same here, 4.5 Vulcan sex slaves.
All right, make it 4.5. Do me a 4.5.
Okay.
4.5 is across the board.
Okay, got it.
It does beg the question about what exactly the program Vulcan Sex Slaves is.
I think you can figure it out.
I mean, in Deep Space Nine, Next Generation time, can you think of a race as unsexy as the Vulcans?
I think that's the point.
Oh, okay. Because in the original, you had to prink.
Oh,
now,
yeah, you did.
You know, there's a Vulcan sex slave for you. But
really? Yeah,
to Paul? Yeah, okay.
Oh, that to Paul. I was thinking to Pow.
Yeah. Whoa, to Paul.
Hey, Enterprise. If you watch Enterprise, to Pow was a hottie in her day.
Mm-hmm. But they could do that. Meld with you. And I'm just saying, they know nerve pinches.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. I've thought this through a little bit more than I should have. Yeah, the Kama Sutra.
I think somebody's thought about this a little bit too much.
Well, you've been texting us all week about Vulcan sex slaves. Let's not.
I have never been embarrassed to say one of my favorite all-time Star Trek girls is T'Pring.
Yeah, I don't.
Always has been. She is flawlessly logical.
You know who else is logical? Blaine.
What an excellent segue.
Sing, Bill. All right.
That
was it. You just had a musical interlude. So we're done.
I bet Blaine knows how to spell and say hyperbole.
Did you think, when O'Brien's working on the hyperdrive, he spends some time on the hyperbole also?
I think he had a little too much fun driving the Bashir hologram into the wall.
Blaine says, hi, guys. A nice little one-off following the big two-parter, or at least that's how the first half hour feels. Now we have a massive change for Bashir, a glimpse into a less-than-ideal family in the future, the story behind Nog's mother, and a rather significant change for Rom. Then there's the guest star, Brian George. Some know him as Richard Bashir, others as Babu, but to me he'll always be the sergeant from the Edison twins. There's also a subtle message and warning here. 200 years later, society is still feeling the effects of the eugenic wars. What will the Dominion War leave in its wake? Blaine. So Blaine peeled a little bit at the onion also.
Yeah, we forgot to talk about Rom's wife, did we?
No,
I don't think we mentioned.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. That, and they just kind of throw that in almost as a throwaway, but now we're giving Rom some depth that he didn't have.
Yeah, this was a really good character episode. I'm fully deserving of 4.5.
Are we at the seven? Edison twins, is that a British thing, Andy?
I don't know. Who are they?
That's why he's here.
Are they like the Double Mint twins?
Double your pleasure, double your fun. Anyway, how about regular email?
We've got one.
Yeah. Anyone? Anyone?
To some. Do you want me to do it again?
I can do it if you want.
I want you to do it.
Okay. The ex-producer has spoken. Email bag, always behind.
Okay. Executive producer, by the way.
If that's where you like being, who am I to judge? It's from Ben. Okay, executive producer. Hello, just finished listening to this week's episode about season 5, episode 5, The Assignment. I'm starting to feel ignored that none of my emails have been acknowledged. Oh, they've been acknowledged now, Ben. Don't worry. Then hearing that you're just now responding to emails about episodes from a few weeks before my first letter. It's a little hard to have a podcast listener relationship with this kind of time lapse, but as a one-time online reviewer, I do acknowledge and appreciate how useful it can be for content creators to have a nice, sizable backlog. Yeah, sorry about that, but we just like having a number of episodes in the can, because when there are so many of us on the call, and it is a lot of life to have to juggle, there are times where, like happened recently, we couldn't get together for 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And if we were working close to the bone, that would have been 6 weeks that you didn't have an episode. So we made this decision, or Paul made this decision ages ago, that he likes having at least 10 in the bag at any one time, and that's something that we've tried to skip to keep to just in case. I get what you're saying about the back and forth, but we're on Twitter and Facebook if you want to talk to us, and all of us are quite amenable. None of us are assholes.
Oh, speak for yourself.
All right, me and Dave aren't assholes. Hey,
well, you big Bill down on that one.
And Bill's all right.
And Bill is all right.
You know, anyway. I don't appreciate your hyperboil.
I've told you, get that looked at by Dr. Bashir.
So if you don't appreciate his hyperbole, is it platable?
Anyway, continues Ben, as far as The Assignment, it's become a bit of a stealth favourite of mine. On second viewing of the series, it jumped out as one of those episodes that's way better than one remembers it being. I'm with Paul about how well it's put together and about how nice it is to see Rosalind Chow do something different than her generally thankless role on the show. The little moment of menace that you didn't mention that gets me every time is when she's accidentally pulling Molly's hair a little to remind Miles what the stakes are. That is cold. It seems appropriate that after all they've tortured O'Brien in seasons 1 through 4, the only place to go from here is to hit him where it hurts the most, in the family.
I vacillate
in the family jewels. I vacillate on whether or not I like what the Parraths bring to the series in the long term, but just for this episode, the concept works well. I mostly bring up the Parraths just to mention that I'm a stickler for the original spelling. It seems like a name that the Bajorans, with their concept of par, might conceivably use to describe the anti-prophets. Glad you're enjoying season 5 so much, and excited to hear what you make of, or have already made of, where it goes from here. Ben, well, thank you for emailing in, Ben.
Yes,
thank you. Tissum.
Spatula Messiah.
Ben, please explain to us what that means.
Yeah, can you bring the graphs and the charts you were talking about? Don't think I've forgotten about that. Everybody else has, apparently.
So I guess that's it for Dr. Bashir, I presume. What are we doing next time?
The Edison Twins was on in Canada for like 6 seasons. In like 82 in the 80s. Sorry.
Yeah, hoser.
Hey.
What are we doing next time?
Yeah. Next time on an all new episode of Listen to the Prophet, Odo falls in love.
Law.
You tried to break into the station computer. Why?
Brings order.
She's not who she seems to be.
But passion is deadly on the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
This doesn't sound promising, but let's give it a bit of the doubt. Yeah. You know, it could be a pleasant surprise. You never know.
No.
It could be shit. I mean, it's a 50-50 shot, I think. I don't think it's going to be right in the middle.
No, you know what? It's not a 50-50 shot, because I think we've had some consistently good episodes. I think odds are it's going to be good.
How have the Odo episodes
been? Oh, I didn't mean that. We're talking about him falling in love, whether this guy's going to work out. You know, it either is or it isn't. So
it's not working out. Please.
Spoilers.
It's not working out. We will never see this woman ever again.
And then Odo shows up at Quark's bar. Let me see that Vulcan sex slave program.
I was watching something. I can't remember what it was, but Rene Aubergeois was on it, a younger, much younger Rene Aubergeois, but he looked like Odo. Like, his face looked so tight. And I wish I could remember what it was I saw him on.
Benson.
No, it was pre-Benson. First thing I ever remember seeing him on was the 1976 remake of King Kong, but he was around before.
Oh, yeah,
that.
That's right. Yeah. I forget he's in that.
I can't remember what I saw him in, but it was some. I saw him on TV in something, and I was like, "Hey, that's Rene Aubergeois," and he just looked weird. He had the big mop of hair, which was funny.
Oh, we got to look it up now.
Okay.
Nah, it's okay. Maybe next time. We'll do it next time. We'll save it for the next show. We'll do a Odo perspective.
Retrospective.
Yeah, whatever that word. As long as I don't have to pronounce it.
Well, next time you don't have to do the synopsis.
Thank goodness.
Something for you to look forward to. Anyway. I guess that's it. That's
yeah.
It. See you all in 2 weeks.
Right. 10th of November's no
problem. I was saying goodbye to the listening people.
Oh, right. I thought we'd already signed
yeah,
up.
Yeah, yeah. Goodbye.
Yeah, whatever. I thought we always cut after the next time. Sorry. Yeah, bye, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Listen to the Prophets at Deep Space Nine podcast is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
By noting that for every Julian Bashir, an immensely talented physician, there is a potential for a
God damn.
Megalomaniac. You know,
guys, when this episode is over, can we have Bill enhanced? He's struggling so much. I feel bad.
You know, you
became Bill Cosby all of a sudden.
Dude, what don't be an episode in the synopsis?
You know, you screw up one hyperboil and everything goes to shit. What the hell's a megalomaniac? Is that a guy that really collects Migos?
It's the same guy as the Dana.
I did that with a purpose.
Sure you did. Just say that about all of them now.
Yeah.